LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk. Waking up with the sun here on Tuesday morning. I'm Case Kiefer alongside Taylor Byrne. Ray Brewer out today on vacation, so we'll get you through the best we can talking all things sports in Las Vegas. Going to discuss some poker today, World Series of Poker kind of entering its three big weeks. But before that, I think the biggest sporting event of this week, now that the NBA Finals have passed, the Miami Heat are the champions. I happily say, yeah, big Heat fan for
what jersey
my
did
whole
you
life.
Wear?
So not, I actually didn't wear a jersey. I just went with the hat because I hadn't been wearing jerseys the whole series.
See, I was debating. I was watching Game 7 with some of our friends, and I was like, huh, I wonder what jersey he's got on. It's got to be whatever he wore for Game 6.
Yeah, no, I just threw on one of my hats.
How many do you have jerseys? Is it like six Heat ones?
Well, I think I've lost one of them, but
really.
Well, I haven't
it
seen
better
it in
not
like
been
years
Glenn
and
Rice.
Years. No, not Glenn Rice. I think it's Shaq.
Oh, that doesn't
my Shaq
count.
One
yeah, who
years.
Cares?
Yeah, so probably.
So you got
six, maybe
James, Rice, Wade. Do you have multiple LeBron James ones?
Two James.
You got a black and a white.
Both black. But one's like a special black. One's just like a replica.
With that, like the pink thing down the side.
No,
right?
No, that's Wade.
Oh, that's the Wade
yeah,
one.
Yeah. It's like. It's like red and yellow, kind of. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, I think I know that one. Yeah.
That might be the best one.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, like six.
So who are the Heat looking at pick 30?
I thought they didn't have a first-round pick.
Maybe they don't.
No, they don't have a first-round pick, actually.
How are they ever going to recover from not having a first-round pick?
Yeah, so I don't know who they're looking at. I'll tell you what, though. If the Heat did have a pick in the middle, I'd be wanting them to look at local Shabazz Muhammad. I think I keep hearing he's dropping, and I, from watching him, actually really like him, and I think I'd want him just as much as anyone else in this draft. So if you could get him at 14 or 15, I'd be taking him.
I think it's possible he lasts that long, but I don't think he's dropping quite as much as you think. That was definitely the narrative early on, but that's mostly because, you know, if he could have come straight out of high school, a lot of people expected him to be the top overall pick. And so after all of his things at UCLA, which it's kind of forgotten, he averaged like 17 points a game. Like the dude can score. And I think it's unlikely but possible that he'll be top 10. Like he could be in that kind of 9 or 10 slot. I don't think he'll make it out of the lottery, which is 14. But he's just kind of – he's in that range, maybe like the – you know, he could go maybe as high as 8. And could slip to like 15 or 16. But I would think kind of 11, 12, 13 is where we'll be seeing Shabazz Muhammad pick, which so far, and this is kind of surprising, I haven't seen that he's got a draft room invite.
Yeah, I saw someone on Twitter last night. I was talking about how he still doesn't have one.
Yeah, and I thought that they were going to do it for 14 players. That was my original understanding. And like 2 weeks ago, they released like the first seven, which is basically like the top seven picks. Bennett is UNLV's Anthony Bennett is in that group, and he will be there with his family. But everybody was just kind of saying, oh, you know, just wait. You know, when they do the second group or whatever, Shabazz is definitely going to be in there. But then I saw a list yesterday, 2 days ago, whatever, that was 10 guys, and he was not on it. So I don't know if they'll expand that anymore or what. But I certainly don't think it's for him anyway. I don't think it's somewhere they'd have to worry about him like slipping to the end of the first round or something. But maybe for them it's just not worth it because nobody wants to embarrass any of these kids and just having like the close up shot in the green room when you've been there like 2 hours longer than you were expecting.
Yeah, I can't believe he's not going to be invited, or as of this moment isn't. I know the embarrassed thing, but I just don't see him falling that far.
I agree.
I mean, right now, even what you were saying, the lowest is like 14 or 15.
Yeah, like if he, there's no way he makes it to 20, and I think there's probably no way he makes it to 16, 15. You know, I think he'll probably be in the top 12.
Right, and I'm looking at the order now. I have to qualify this with saying I haven't kept up as well as you have, of course, as you're covering the draft for LasVegasSun.com. But I read things here and there because I'm always a little interested in the draft, and I do remember seeing something that said, like, the Celtics loved Shabazz, and if he drops to them, they would take him, no question. Yeah, not that he probably will, but they're 16.
16, yeah.
So if that's true, then I don't understand why you wouldn't invite the kid, but what do I know, I guess.
But it's also, I never read too much into the, oh, we love this kid type of thing. A lot of it is just conjecture, and some of it they may actually mean it, but there's also three other kids that they love that if all of them are available, then they have a tough choice. and that kind of thing. And, you know, so that's going to be a local storyline, having people tuning in. Pierre Jackson, the Baylor guard, will likely, I think most projections I've seen have the former Las Vegas. Let's see, where did he go? I'm blanking now.
Baylor.
No.
Cheyenne.
Cheyenne guard going like kind of the end of the first round. Slight chance that Elijah Johnson goes in the late second. I think that's more likely a free agent pickup. But those are kind of the later storylines. But the headline, the top billing, of course, goes to Anthony Bennett, 2-year Finley Prep player, 1-year UNLV, dealing with the shoulder injury. And I actually saw, I don't know if you saw this morning, Chad Ford was tweeting that at one of his, he's not going to workouts because he can't work out right now, but he's been, you know, kind of going all around the country meeting teams. He's up to 261 pounds right now, which is like 18 to 20 pounds over what he was playing at UNLV, which a lot of people think was too heavy anyway. So that's certainly a concern. I was actually, one of our old college friends is crashing with me right now, and I had made the comparison to he's got kind of a Sherron Collins type of build, where once he's not working out like all the time, like he's just a big guy. Like it just balloons up on him. And especially if you're doing all this type of traveling, and you and I both know, you don't usually eat that well when you're bouncing around airport to hotel type of thing. And so I think that's certainly a concern, but I don't think any team is probably hinging whether it takes him in the top five or not because he's gained some weight recently. You know, it's easy to get that back down. And it's also, you know, I think people already knew that, you know, weight is going to be not necessarily even an issue for him. It's something you're going to have to monitor and maintain. Make sure you keep him on a pretty strict regimen because he's got a big body type. He's a big dude. So that's kind of like the most recent update with him from on the road because he can't do the workout. So there's nothing. And I've talked maybe even on this radio show, talked to Brewer about it before. I think that could end up draft-wise helping him. You know, because maybe he would have gone up against somebody and like had a really bad workout, and then all of a sudden he's like number 8, or had two really bad workouts, and all of a sudden he's number 10. Because I think I was just actually reading the oral history of the 2003 draft.
Yeah, I read that too.
I'm not all the way through it yet, but everybody talking about how like the turning point for Darko was just this amazing workout he had. Like, it's just kind of with the NFL, I think people put too much into what they see in a gym one-on-one. One day, as opposed to what you have on film for, you know, for in Ben's case in college for 1 year, for some guys, 3-4 years, it can make or break a lot of people. And so the fact that he didn't have a chance to enhance his stock based on workouts, but it was already pretty high. So didn't hurt himself either. So I think he's definitely in that 3 to 5 range. Someone recently was telling me that don't rule him out for number one. I don't see it.
No but, way. He's not going number one.
I don't think so either. But I really don't think he's making it past 5 either.
That oral history could also be an indicator that the weight thing doesn't mean much. Have you gotten to the part where the Nuggets are thinking about passing on Carmelo at 3 because he came into their workout like 230 some pounds?
Oh, I haven't made it.
Yeah, it's probably coming up. I just remember reading something about how he ballooned up and they were worried about his weight going into the draft.
Yeah, and that just kind of goes to show you for every example of somebody who like you look back after maybe a failed or a not fulfilled career and you say, oh, you know, there were all these kinds of warning signs. Well, there's also guys where it's just. That's just something that happens, and then they take care of it. Like, it doesn't have to be a big issue. But I know as soon as I saw that tweet, like, of course, people were over, because a lot of people already thought he was lazy, you know, and that's a big knock. His defense, his weight, getting up and down the court because he was not honest about his asthma, you know, like, it all just kind of factors into perception, which right now is very much boom or bust. And I think that's, you know, I would say I'd be shocked if he was like a multiple time first team all NBA guy, like if he really, really became like the star that he has potential to be. But I'm not going to be surprised at all if he's really, really good in the NBA. Like I think the ceiling might be a little bit lower than most people have it, but he's got a chance to be, you know, a 10-year very good NBA player. Be a versatile offensive weapon, and if he can improve on defense, I think it's going to be a transition thing for him, though. I think it's going to take him 2 or 3 years. He can he can impact an NBA team this upcoming season and score for them. But I think the workload, the games, everything is just going to be such a grind and so different from what he's used to that that I think there's definitely going to be a learning curve where he's going to have it's just going to be a tough transition. It's a big change in lifestyle, being given all this money while simultaneously being given all this freedom. That, you know, it's just you got to see how each individual kid handles that. And that's that'll be interesting to see. But a lot of local interest in the draft. I will not be going to New York. I don't know where I'm going to watch it at yet. Maybe we'll have a viewing party. Maybe we'll get something together for that. But
is it Wednesday or Thursday?
It's Thursday night.
Thursday.
But yeah, I'll be writing on it. You know, watching it with the same interest that everybody else around here is going to have. And like I said, I don't think Bennett makes it past five. And I don't think, I guess we could probably put the cap for Boz at 16 then, if you know, there's at least perceived Celtics interest there. That I don't think he even makes it that far. I think 11 or 12 is kind of his range. And I know you definitely think that that's a good pick.
Yeah, I would want Shabazz Muhammad, and I wouldn't be disappointed if it was my team that took Anthony Bennett either, but I would maybe I'm just buying into the perception, but I would look at it as this is a big gamble. This guy could end up being great or it could just not work out.
Yeah.
And all I know is I would have lost a lot of money at this time last year, even though I know they were both like top 10 guys and everyone was really high on them. I would have said no way Bennett gets drafted before Shabazz a year ago.
Yeah, that would have been an interesting question. I mean, because Bennett came into UNLV basically as like a fringe first round guy. Like he was on draft boards and he was a name that GMs were looking at, but it wasn't in, you know, it really only took like four or five games for him to just vault up. But people weren't that high on him, and so he did himself a lot of good. And this is why, as far if you're looking at it from the UNLV perspective, not only will they be able to say that we have, you know, like a top five pick. But you can go find the archives and show future recruits, all right, yeah, he was an NBA prospect when he came in here, but he came in as a fringe first round and he left as top five. Like that's a huge selling point for UNLV going forward with its, you know, kind of the dabbling into the one and done type of talent, which is, you know, which is what they want to do. They think that's how they're going to be able to win. And this is we won't see for certain, you know, how much Bennett impacts it. But I talked to Dave Rice this morning, and this is something, you know, he's told me before. Every time Anthony Bennett is introduced to NBA audiences across the country, it'll be Anthony Bennett, comma, UNLV. Like, it's just going to have that attachment for a long time, which they, you know, Joel Anthony just picked up his second NBA ring, but it ain't, you know, it ain't the same as having a guy that high up. But, yeah, so Thursday night, ESPN, I'm sure, unless it's on ABC.
ESPN, pretty sure. And, yeah. And one last correction. I knew this sounded wrong when I said it, so I looked up. Pierre Jackson was Desert Pines.
Okay.
It was Elijah that was Cheyenne.
Yeah, there you go.
I knew it was Elijah at Cheyenne, but for some reason I said Pierre, too.
That was Case Kiefer getting those high schools wrong, not me.
Yeah.
No, but because I couldn't even venture. I'm not good at it.
Yeah, as soon as I said it, I knew it sounded wrong. And I think I got it confused with the kid that played at Wichita State this year also and went to Cheyenne.
Yeah.
Not that he's going to be in the draft, but...
But yeah, so that's what I've got going this week for you. World Series of Poker, your first love in Las Vegas, really. Once you moved here, originally worked for, you were an intern, is that right?
I was an intern at the World Series of Poker. I don't know if I loved it at first. I had no idea what was going on. My head was spinning.
It was your job. I'm claiming that you love your
job. Really, people might have made a joke out of this and stuff, but I don't know if when I came here, if I knew that a flush would beat a straight. I would like that basic. I mean, that's just an example, but that basic of knowledge, I had no idea.
Man, look at you, and look at you now with poker, and then you came here with zero UFC knowledge too.
Yeah, UFC. I could probably
you're just a sponge.
Yeah, UFC. I could have probably named like two fighters, and not even really good ones. I just could have named Brock Lesnar because he's a big
because
name.
Because of the tie-over.
Yeah.
So yeah. So what? It's not the main event yet. But what is kind of the stuff that's going on over there this week?
Yeah, so if you're unfamiliar with the World Series of Poker, there's 62 events throughout the summer for bracelets, which is the biggest prize in poker, you becoming a champion. We're through about maybe 37 or 38 of them, and they've kind of backloaded the schedule this year. I'd say three of the four biggest events are still to come. Wednesday, the $111,000 buy-in called Big One or something for one drop.
Big One for the drop.
Yeah, Guy Laliberte's charity where the Rio or Caesars doesn't take any rake. All the money goes to the charity. But last year they did $1 million tournament and it sold out. They only made, I think, 48 spots available and it filled, which they couldn't believe.
Are they doing that one again?
They're going to do it every other year because they think asking people to pony up $1 million every year is just a lot. But since there was such a great turnout and such a great response to that, they said we should have something this year. And that's how they came up with $111,000 one, which I think is going to get a lot more people. I mean, obviously, it's 1/10 of the buy-in. It's still expensive, but I think a lot of really good poker players are going to look at this as an opportunity because just like the $1 million tournament, there's a lot of billionaire businessmen playing in it and stuff.
They just want to swoop in and
just for charity.
Beat the champs.
Yeah, and so I mean, if you load the field with guys like that, and there's more value to the pros because they know they hold an advantage over these guys. In fact, I saw Seth Polansky, one of the guys on the WSOP brass, tweet last week. They had 23 people already entered for the $111,000, and only one of them was a poker pro. Which tells you all of them so far, businessmen, poker pros, notoriously into procrastination. They'll all register like the last minute. So already a lot of interest outside of it, and that's going to be a fun one to watch. And then Sunday is the start of the Poker Players Championship, the $50,000 buy-in, 8-game mix, pretty much all the biggest poker disciplines.
8-game mix, so like every hand?
Every round. Okay. So you'll play around the table once in... you know, 7-card stud, and then you'll switch to Raz or...
That'd be fun.
Yeah, it'd be fun, but I don't know about for $50,000.
There's nothing fun to me about giving someone $50,000 that I don't have.
Yeah, I'd have to learn the games, though, because I really only know... I mean, I could get by maybe a little bit in Omaha,
I would definitely have to, like, freshen up, but that just reminds me of, like, you know, poker games, if you're just, like, with your buddies or something, and it's always... you pass around, and it's dealer's choice. And I always liked just kind of the switching up of games like that. It kind of keeps you on your toes because I'm someone, I get bored with playing poker. Like, I just can't. I'm not quite Ray Brewer bad as far as, like, wanting to go all in every hand or playing every hand. But I definitely, like, when you and I have just kind of gotten together with friends to play, I'm just like, all right, can we go play bags now?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that probably does cut down on that. And the biggest thing it was when they started this tournament in 2006, it was just, it had been about 3 or 4 years since the boom where the main event was getting, you know, 7,000 people or whatever, where it's really just, it seems like every year there's one or two notable guys that gets really deep in the main event and has a chance to win, but it's really not the true championship anymore because so many people enter.
There's just too many people.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is a lot more restricting. I mean, you have to be a pretty big name pro with a big bankroll or at least confident in yourself to pony up $50,000 to play in this. So this really kind of became like the championship for pros.
It's like the sharks eating each other.
Yeah. And it's insane. It's only been 6 years. And Michael the Grinder Mizrachi last year won it for the second time.
Oh, wow.
Which is just really just crazy. I don't even think he's gotten enough attention as he should have for doing that twice. Weird. Nolan Dalla, who's like the biggest poker historian, whatever, the media director of the WSOP, said he would have set the over under at least 20 years before someone repeated in this event.
Really?
Just because everyone's so good. And
how many are in that particular one?
Usually it's right around 100.
Okay.
So I don't know what we'll see this year. In the past, this might not mean as much anymore now that online poker shut down, but in the past they alternated whether it was on TV or not a couple years. In the years it wasn't on TV, they'd only get like 80, and then the year it was on TV, the one time they got like 140 or something, and then it went back to like 90. And a big part of that was sponsors are more willing to put up some of your buy-in if they can get their product on TV. And I actually don't think it's on TV this year.
How many of these are you going to?
I'll be out there at least a couple times. I'll be at when they get to the final table for the $50,000, I'll definitely be there. And I'll probably go out for the start. The $100,000, I'll go out for the start and then probably be there at the final table. And then still 2 weeks away is the main event, which we just talked about, the $10,000 buy-in that'll have a ridiculous number of people. And I'll be out at it just about every day except the beginning because same night as UFC 162.
Yeah. I kind of want to go to one of these final tables with you. I've never gone. I could be surprised and it be just completely boring. But I think it would be enjoyable. Or at least it's like a Vegas thing to do. you know, and I've never like even watched just a regular poker table for very long, but I'd kind of like to go to like that, the Players Championship one.
Yeah, it's kind of boring. I don't think you'd be that excited, but yeah. If you went for like a few minutes, I guess, or if there's one to go to, it's probably the main event in November because they have it in
the... How many people just like are like when it's, even when it's down to like a few tables at the main event, how many people are there around to watch?
This summer, when it's down to a couple, I'd say there's only probably a few hundred, mostly just friends and stuff. But I mean, once it gets to November, all these guys fly all their families out.
So they still do the split?
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think about that? Is this the second or third year that they're doing that?
This is the sixth year.
What?
They started in 2008.
Oh, I didn't realize that they'd been doing that long.
There was talk they were going to stop it now that ESPN shows a lot of it live. But what ESPN found and the ratings found is that people just really want to watch it and get to know the players and stuff. So,
well, I mean, that's the key to basically any reality show.
Yeah, so they kept it in November. And the players, when they first announced this, the players didn't really know what to think. But, I mean, the feedback from the players has actually been really good. I think they understand like it. It's better for the game. And it's not like they're going home empty-handed for August and November. I mean, the ninth place usually pays, like, something around $1 million, sometimes 900,000, something, sometimes 1.2 million. And you get all that money up front.
Oh,
so,
you do?
Yeah. So you get, when you leave in July, you get like $1 million.
Oh, okay.
And they put the rest of the prize pool in like a 3-month, some kind of fund or whatever. So you're getting interest on it too.
Oh, wow. I didn't know any of that.
So then everyone that comes back, you at least get some money on top of that. But so the players really haven't complained. I think the players like it. ESPN obviously really likes it. I can't speak for the WSOP, obviously. I think maybe they might be interested in changing it and just having it be the live. But I think they understand that if ESPN says it's best and the players don't mind, I guess this is where it'll be for a while.
Are you ever going to play in the main event?
Not anytime soon. I don't have 10,000 just laying around.
I guess there's probably not as many satellites.
Yeah, there are quite a lot of satellites. It's not online.
That's what I say, because it's not online anymore.
But that's something I'd have to investigate, because I really don't know how. I mean, I know they have satellites running all the time and people come here just to try to satellite into the main event, but I don't really know what they start at or anything. I'm sure they probably have them as low, maybe even lower, but I know they at least have $500 satellites where you'd only have to beat out, what, like 3 tables or 2.5 tables worth of people, and then you get an entry. So I could see myself trying to satellite in or someday playing, but I don't think anytime soon.
Yeah. How much would, if you had to just pay the 10,000, so what percent, if I gave you $500, what percentage of your, like, purse would I get then? I can't do math.
So that'd be like 20th.
That'd be, all
you
right.
20th. Yeah, you could buy,
I believe in you.
You could buy 5%.
You know, I could do that.
Yeah, if I ever did play anytime soon, that's what I'd have to, as they say in the poker world, piece myself out.
Yeah.
I don't think I could get that much, but I could probably raise... I could raise a couple thousand, but then I'd still be on the hook
Do you think Clate would throw you some?
I don't think Clate would, but I think my dad would for sure.
Oh, your dad definitely would.
Because he's seen me play and thinks I'm better than I am.
Tracy would, so she could get you out of the house.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think if I ever play in an event, it's more likely going to be like a 1,500 or a 1,000, one of these preliminary ones, just to see
that'd be fun.
How it goes. Yeah.
How much resale value is there on bracelets? I'm sure some of these guys have sold them.
Oh, yeah. Supposedly, I think one of our photographers, Steve Marcus, was shooting like a pawn shop or something a year ago, and he just noticed they had like 10 or 15 bracelets.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think it was Steve, and he was asking about it, and he said guys come in there all the time and sell them. Because
they don't care.
Yeah, a lot of them care a lot. I mean,
there are some that care, but there's going to be, because there's what you said, like 62 events a year?
Yeah, at this point.
You know, probably at least 10% of those winners are just like, oh, I'd much rather have the money.
Well, and then the biggest thing I think of it is, I mean, in the poker world, these buy-ins are so big, and if you aren't good at managing your money and your bankroll, so many of these guys go broke.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous how, I mean, some of the best players in the world that you think and you see on TV, like, oh my God, that guy must be a millionaire. He's broke because he's a degenerate gambler and desperate for some money. So I think that.
There's that too, yes.
I think that's a lot of them that you would see on sale are guys that just really actually ended up needing the money.
All right, Ray's not here, so we got to close out with some music. Were you at Killswitch Engage the other night? I can't remember who I was.
I was.
Okay, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Where were they at?
They were at the House of Blues.
I went there for the first time last week. One of my friends just had a plus one for Fall Out Boy. And it was like, all right, I guess.
Who'd they play? Did you see who opened
for? I don't remember. We caught it, like, we were late. Like, we missed Fall Out Boy's first song. I don't know how I'm ever going to forgive myself for that one. But somebody asked me afterward how it was. I was like, yeah, it was Fall Out Boy. It's just kind of, they do what they do, and they had every tween in there loving it.
Was it packed?
Yeah, it was. It had been sold out for a long time.
Yeah, I figured they'd sell out the House of Blues.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I liked them when I was in, like, eighth or ninth grade. So it was a little reminiscing for me. But something now that I just got back from a road trip to celebrate one of our friend's birthdays, and I didn't realize that he and another friend were into this rapper on YouTube that I'm now going to have to, like, make you get into. Uh-oh. Have you ever heard of Froggy Fresh?
I have not.
He used to go by the name Krispy Kreme until he got kind of popular and got sued.
Oh, wow. Now Froggy Fresh.
So changed it. It's basically a character that this white kid who can kind of rap created. But part of what made him big, and I think he's been on Tosh.0 or something, was that nobody was quite sure if he was serious or not. And he hasn't come out and said whether he is, but I'm now just thinking, I'm basically creating a playlist in my mind of what order I want you to watch these videos in. They're great.
So it is like a joke?
Yes. Yeah, yes, but it's also like he never lets the veil down, basically.
Maybe he started being serious and could then he be. Just realized that everyone thought it was hilarious, then he didn't stop.
It's very possible, but it is so, everybody go watch it right now. Most of you will think, if this is the only music advice that you've ever gotten from me, you will think I have a terrible taste in music, because I'm betting like 80% of people who watch it want nothing to do with it or just don't get it. But for those 20% of us who enjoy it, oh, it's so great.
And I was, while we're on this topic, I was thinking about going to EDC last night. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I really want to go just to experience
it
once.
I'd like to go once.
I just want to watch like two guys. I can't take music for longer than like an hour or so. So I'd have to watch
like two
people.
I don't particularly care about the music. I'm not into that scene. Like it's people watching for me. And is people watching worth dealing with all that traffic? Based on some of the photos I saw, maybe it is. Like,
it's wow. Pretty ridiculous. I was I was downtown all Saturday, and then on the strip Saturday and downtown Friday, and God, I got more. It's ridiculous. No one wearing any clothes, just walking around, and I heard so many EDC every time one EDC.
They just
guy,
yell at each other.
Yeah,
EDC.
One time one person walked over, the other one they would yell EDC, and everyone would start screaming. And actually, at the show I was at Saturday, the Killswitch Engage, the crowd started screaming, expletive EDC, expletive EDC. And the band's like, what? What are you guys so mad about? What are you talking about? And they didn't know. And like their manager came out and told them. And he's like, oh, okay.
maybe next year for us, Keith.
Yeah, maybe.
All right. That's going to do it. LasVegasSun.com sports talk. For Case, I am Taylor. We'll talk to you guys next week.